Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Radio Network. Pro football full circle.
Third and goal. Jackson will now take it from the gun, from the pistol. Keeping himself untouched into the end zone. 14 plays, 68 yards, and a half cartwheel into the end zone.
And Lamar Jackson is going back on the field, and they are going for it, or at least a hard count.
The Chiefs have to make sure they don't jump. And Jackson will get the first down and, in effect, end the game.
Go on with it. John Harbaugh.
Oh, baby, the dogs were barking last night. Week number two of the NFL season are in the books. Welcome to Pro Football Full Circle right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius Channel 204. Joe Lisi and George Kurtz talking all things NFL. A lot to get into today, including the injuries to Tua, Dalton, Baker Mayfield, and the rest. We'll go through it as the show progresses. But George, yesterday saw upset city, baby. Five potential underdogs won the ball game outright. We heard in the open the Ravens dominate the Kansas City Chiefs as a 3.5-point underdog. Lamar Jackson with a big night through the air and on the ground. And John Harbaugh rolled the dice, asked his quarterback, hey, Lamar, you want to go for it? He said, yeah, baby, let's do it. And they upset Patrick Mahomes and the crew. But I want to ask you, out of all the potential upsets that transpired this weekend, and I'll go through the five, the Ravens, Raiders, Carolina, Titans, and Cowboys, and you have to be unbiased because we know you're a Dallas fan, which one was the most impressive yesterday?
Well, once again, I think everybody knows I'm pretty much an unbiased Cowboy fan. I criticize them more than anybody. Not the Cowboy game. Not the Ravens game. They were at home. I'm not going to give it that. Carolina, nah, we have some doubts about New Orleans, but very impressed there with how they did it. I know Pittsburgh was one. What was the other one I missed?
Carolina, Titans, and then the Raiders. You didn't touch on the Raiders.
Titans. It's either Titans or the Raiders. I think taking the way you want to go for it. I think I got to go Raiders. I know I tweeted you to this yesterday. You know, you come up a short week. You're going to play a good team in their home opener on the road. And it's a decent flight across the country here. So I got to go Raiders here. I think I was definitely impressed there. And I know Raider fans are going to point out they were without several key defensive players, but every team can bitch about that during the year. And for the Raiders to come in there and Carr put up almost 400 yards on the through the air, very impressed with the Raiders. Titans as well. Like I said, this is really close here. Titans who got annihilated last week in their game and come back. Once again, you were two touchdowns down. I think you were two touchdowns down twice. Come back, win that game. You probably should have won it on the safety at the end. I don't know what the NFL is going on here with the officiating. I thought the officiating was horrendous yesterday. Absolutely horrendous. I definitely think that was a safety against the Russell Wilson. I'll give it to the Raiders, but the Titans are a really close second.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Carolina and the Raiders. And now that's not to take away from the Titans in terms of the dominant performance. Now, they trailed 24-9, the Titans did, for much of the second quarter. In the third quarter was the Derrick Henry show, rushed for over 150 yards, three touchdowns on the ground. That defense made adjustments against Russell Wilson and the crew. Where was the running game for Seattle? Chris Carson non-existent. Russell Wilson, three carries, 16 yards. I understand he wants to be a pocket passer, but can you tuck it in and run to get your team a first down when your team needs it the most? I thought the play call when they took over in the overtime period was absolutely atrocious. Three straight passes. They were backed up at the 18-yard line. At least let yourself get out before you become aggressive in terms of that atmosphere. So that's why I can't give it to the Titans solely, even though they did step up For me, it was Carolina, and I know I talked about Carolina all week, but when you saw the dominance week number one of famous Jameis, remember the 5 touchdown passes, only 148 yards, comeback player of the year, potential MVP candidate, Sean Payton coach of the year, all of that is out the window after week two, right? All of a sudden, they get blown out on the road 26-7, and oh, by the way, this Carolina Panther team is 2-0, they're playing defense, and their quarterback, Sam Darnold, all of a sudden starting to move the football through the air. The New York Jets didn't want him, but Sam Darnold is resurrected in Carolina with Joe Brady in terms of the offensive coordinator there.
I think one of the funniest things I heard yesterday is someone suggesting a trade between Carolina and the Jets that will give you Darnold for Wilson at a 1. Just thought.
Oh, man.
That was funny. It was definitely funny. Made me laugh. Now, a couple of things here. Seattle only attempted 18 rushes yesterday, and that includes the 3 by Wilson. So their game plan may have been to put the ball up in the air, which does make sense because that's where Tennessee's weakness is. I think we're going to see more teams do that nowadays. Rather than, you know, beat your head into a wall here if you can't run the ball, we're going to throw the ball if we can't run it. That being said, they were averaging 4.3 yards a carry. Yeah, so that doesn't sort of support that. Anyway, you could run the ball, you just didn't want to. You know, so I might give it to you there. Jameis is not winning comeback player of the year. What's he coming back from?
Coming back from mediocrity, right? 30 interceptions,
That's not what you get that award for. You gotta be coming back from something. So he's not getting that. Yeah, that award's all Dak anyway. I'd be shocked if he doesn't win it with the injury he's suffering, the numbers he's going to put up this year. Generally, it has to be an injury or something of that. Something of that acclaim to really come back for that. Carolina's definitely been impressive. They were going to be an interesting team. The Saints, you mentioned 148 yards from the game at the first game. We sort of forget about that because he had 5 touchdowns. Only 111 yesterday. It's getting really ugly really quick there.
Yeah, when we come back, we'll be going through all the week 2 action. Also, get you prepared for week number 3. This is Joe Lisi and George Kurtz right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network. Keep it where it is.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Back on Pro Football Full Circle right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network. Joe Lisi and George Kurtz breaking down the recap of NFL action week number 2. Talked about some of the games, Carolina and New Orleans. Also talked about the Titans and Seattle. How about that beatdown in Miami? Buffalo 35-0 all over the Dolphins. Tua did get injured in the first half of that matchup. Didn't matter. This was all about the interior line play of the Buffalo Bills. Started early. Devin Singletary with a 46-yard run really capped and started the onslaught of the Buffalo Bills. They never turned back. Really held Jacoby Brissett and the Miami offense in check for some turnovers inside the red zone. But I said it before that this would be a beatdown, but more importantly, this is the team to beat in the AFC. We saw that Kansas City lost yesterday. They do have some defensive holes in terms of their play. We saw Lamar Jackson exploit that. But I'll say this. Buffalo's defense in back-to-back weeks, they stepped up. I know they lost week number 1. But this is a legitimate defense, and they took it to a physical defense in Miami yesterday. Ran all over the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, so I think Miami might have been one of the more disappointing teams yesterday. Not that I expected them to win. Didn't, but I thought they'd give them a game. I thought it would be a game. Really did, especially in the heat in Miami. You know, there's a reason they have that stadium where there's shade over the home team, and the road visiting team gets the sun directly on them. A little home field advantage there. Did affect Buffalo yesterday. I mean, they came out and really destroyed them. I think what I found funny was after the game, Jacoby Brissett going on a little bit of a rant here, going, this is why I know I'm a starter in this league. I should be a starter in this league. Buddy, you just lost 35-0. You went 24-40. What in those numbers tells you that you should be a starter? I just found it a weird time, Joe, for someone to be making this statement. It's not like he made he was losing by 21. He made the game. He just only lost by one. Yeah. Great game comeback. You were 24 of 40 for 169 yards. Your average per attempt was 4.2. 4.2! I'd shut up, Jacoby, if I were you. Because those are backup numbers.
We know about how Brian Flores turned to Ryan Fitzpatrick last year, right, when Tua was ineffective. But this is still a one-dimensional offense in Miami. They can't pound the rock consistently with Myles Gaskin and the offensive line. That has been since the days of Ricky Williams, let's be honest. I mean, they have not really had a consistent running game, and that puts them into predictable long third down situations. And when you have an offensive line, obviously, that isn't as physical as the Buffalo Bills, can't run it when you need to run it, that puts you at a significant disadvantage. And more importantly, your defense is out there for extended periods of time. And then in the heat, they wore down, not the Buffalo Bills. So it was the flip script, right? Everybody thought that Miami would be able to wear down the Buffalo team because they're coming from the Northeast down to South Beach. It was the other way. I mean, because of the Buffalo Bills' ability to run the football, they averaged 4.8 yards per carry. And the inefficiency of Jacoby Brissett, now he did put them into red zone opportunities a couple of times, but you saw Jakeem Grant fumble the football. You saw them inconsistent in terms of third down situations. You're not going to win games that way. And for Jacoby Brissett to say that he's a starter in this league, if he was that good, how come he's not with the Colts right now?
Agreed. He's had a couple of chances there with New England and the Colts. Listen, I think he's a very good backup. I think that's what he is. I don't think he's a starting quarterback. Certainly not one anyone's afraid of. You know, he's never going to be elite or even good. I said, weird timing for that, for him to come out like that. Now, you mentioned the Dolphins do have some problems. They're going to be good. Draft Jalen Waddle there. You got Devontae Parker. You know, eventually we think they'll have Will Fuller, though. That was a strange situation. Now he's away from the team on a personal reason. We don't know exactly what that is. But that's weird all of a sudden. Gets activated. Now he's not still can't play. So their points are going to come through the passing game with Waddle, Parker, and Fuller, assuming, or they were hoping, that Tua could take that next step. Now, if he can't, and you've got him to Brissett, Brissett's probably already ahead of Tua as far as the passing game's concerned. You may not lose much there. But you need it to be better than that, because like I said, the running game is probably going to be average to maybe a tick above average at best. They were going to rely on the passing game taking a big step and also the defense. And neither one's taking effect right now. Defense, like I said, that's just one game. I'm not going to freak out about it. And you know, you mentioned they got eaten up in the run game. They only had 179 yards through the air. It just seems like they're just on the field too much.
Yeah, well, that was it. I mean, Josh Allen didn't have to do much, right? When they can run the football consistently and pound it down your throat, he was only 17 of 33. Like you mentioned, 179, two touchdowns, one interception. I actually thought he would do it through the air. They went on the ground with the rushing game in Singletary. And, you know, as long as they can run the football like that, I mean, I don't think they need to fix anything. People have talked, and Bills fans, we know a majority of them on the network are concerned about that rushing game with Moss and Singletary. I got to be honest, I don't think it's that big of a concern for this team to make a playoff run. I mean, I think they could get by with both of those running backs. As long as the physicality is there from the offensive line and they're opening the holes, you can get by with both of those backs. You don't need an elite back. Look at the success that Baltimore had last night against Kansas City. I mean, look at those running backs, Latavius Murray, Tyson Williams. I mean, we're not talking about Alvin Kamara, Ezekiel Elliott back there. As long as the offensive line is winning the point of attack, you're going to be able to run the football effectively.
Yeah, and we know it's a passing league, but running the ball still has its place there. You know, once again, if you can make defenses be honest, have to play the run, then you go over the top more. Plus, you eat time off the clock here, keep your defense off the field. Run game, a running attack will always have a place in the NFL. Another thing I found funny today, by the way, is Amazon is looking for Buffalo Bill fans in the Buffalo area for some kind of shoot, and they're willing to pay someone $1,100 if they'll jump through a table.
Oh, they'll get that. Are you kidding? The line that'll
get that
be
easy.
Out. The easy. I mean, they make 50,000 people for that. Of $1,100? Are you kidding me?
I wonder how many times you got to jump through that table.
Probably like four times, I would think. Four takes, right?
I'll take your word for it. Sounds good. Four times. But that's just something. Yeah, but you're right. They'll have no problem getting that. Sure, looking for Buffalo Bill fans. Come on out. It doesn't say where, so I can't tell you that. But if you're going, good luck.
Well, we'll talk about another team that I thought would run the football better than they did. They got the cover, didn't get the win, and that's the Indianapolis Colts, right? I mean, had a 21-17 lead over Matt Stafford in the third quarter. Stafford comes back, scores within about 3 seconds of being in a deficit and in a hole in that ballgame. They hold on for the 27-24 win. Now Carson Wentz, both ankles are injured. Are you kidding me? Could this guy stay up for at least 17 games just once in his career? It's amazing. Jacob Eason did come in, threw a pick. Now, I know people are bashing him, saying they're in trouble. I still think the upside and the trajectory of the franchise is with Jacob Eason at the helm. But are you shocked that they didn't run Jonathan Taylor more in this matchup?
They seem to get frustrated early in the game. I think they gave him 5 chances at the inside the 5, and that's not making that. I think it was 5, might have been 4, might have been 6, but somewhere around there. And he couldn't get. He kept getting stuffed. I think they got a little scared about that after that. You know, they said, "Okay, it's not going to work." All right, so they went away from it. They couldn't get the touchdown. It is what it is. I think their planned uses of Taylor was always going to be a little strange. You know, we heard this in the. Over the summer, right? That we're gonna make sure Mac gets involved, Hines gets involved. Okay, but you know Taylor needs to be your guy. You need to get that run game going because you don't have the dynamic passing game. You don't have that, you know. So I don't know, strange things going on there. They're banking on Carson anyway. And one thing about Carson, I don't give him the hard time you give him, but one thing we know is true: not everybody is built to play in the NFL. And I don't mean you and I. But I mean talking NFL players. Not all NFL players really built to play in the NFL. Some guys can't make it through 4 games, 2 games, more or less 17 now. Carson's one of those guys. He's always going to have this problem. He's hurt one way or the other after a game or two. Like I said, both ankles now they're worried about. Yeah, they haven't given any updates yet. We should find out later today, along with a host of other players, exactly what their prognosis might be. Jacob Eason did come in late in that game. Obviously, didn't look very good here. I think their future is not on the team currently. I think they're going to eventually have to go out and get a quarterback in the draft, free agency next year, whatever it might be.
He's 6'3", 6'4". He's playing like Last Joe. When we come back, we'll still keep it where it is with the Indianapolis Colts, Joe Lisi and George Kurtz, right here on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
To Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Continuing the conversation of the NFL Week 2 recaps, left off talking about Carson Wentz in Indianapolis. George, I mean, I understand that he's not maybe built for the NFL, but his stature, I mean, he's 6'3", 6'4", about 225, 230 pounds. He is the franchise quarterback, right? I mean, Frank Reich put his chips into the middle of the table and said, "I want this guy." He backed him up, said, "I can get the most out of him." Now, all of a sudden, he should be on the top of the buildings with the siren, you know, "Come down, let's go. We got problems here."
Jump.
I mean, they're 0-2. They face Tennessee next, then the Dolphins. I mean, this is not an easy road. I know we talked about it, but now it's coming to fruition. They're 0-2. They're staring at a potential 0-3 football team. You know that once you start 0-2, the odds of making a Super Bowl, even the playoffs for that matter, severely diminished. What does this team do at this point?
Well, one thing, people have to remember, though, when we bring up those odds, those were on a 16-game season, so those odds aren't quite
so
as bad.
You have the extra 17, but still, if they go 0-3, do you think that the mentality of that locker room is going to rally around Carson Wentz? It's like you came here on a short notice. You came here with a lot of skepticism and criticism. Nobody, half the team might have felt that you could do it. Maybe the other half didn't. You haven't done anything up until this point that really solidifies that. So who's to say the locker room's all of a sudden going to rally around Carson Wentz, assuming that he is healthy and that he can play from week three and beyond? Who's to say that the team's even going to be behind him at that point?
I'm not so sure it matters if they rally around or not. All right, here's your problem. You lost those first two games. Now, granted, you lost against two very good teams. Right, very good teams, the Seattle and the Rams. But the problem is now you play three straight road games. Three straight. Tennessee, Miami, Baltimore.
They could be 0-5. Now, I'll give you one win.
I'll give you the Dolphin win. So that's 1-4. Is that any better? Is 1-4 really all that much better? You do get Houston, so 2-4. Then you go to San Fran. That's going to be rough here, 2-5. You play Tennessee again. I mean, you're gonna have six losses here real quick before week eight, before your schedule eases up. We got New York and Jacksonville, the Jets and Jacksonville back-to-back. All right, but then it gets rough again. Buffalo, Tampa Bay. You know, and you finish up, you get Arizona, Vegas on your schedule. Like I said, it was a rough schedule. We have talked about it so many times. This is going to be a rough time for them to get through this. I think it would have been beautiful if they could have gone 3-2. They would have done, you know, cartwheels here. You can make it, maybe you should have won yesterday, or could have won yesterday. You didn't. You know, now I said, I don't see it being Baltimore in week five. I don't think that's going to happen. Next week in Tennessee, I know Tennessee has their issues as well, but look at Derrick Henry, figured some things out there. Tannehill's not playing well either right now, so maybe that gives you a chance there. But they're in trouble. They're in a lot of trouble here, and I'm not surprised. I don't think any of us are surprised here. As for Carson Wentz, I don't see him being the rallying cry kind of guy, that, you know, the rah-rah guy. Plus, he may not be playing. It may not matter, right? And part of his I don't want to say why you want him, though, but he is his mobility. And even if he does play, I got to think that mobility is shot next week, right? Now, he does get a break in that Tennessee doesn't have the greatest pass rush on the planet, so he may have the extra second back there. But they've got problems. As for stepping up, that defense needs to step up. That offensive line needs to step up. Jonathan Taylor needs to step up and take some pressure off Carson, because right now it's not working. But if Carson can't play, I don't see Jacob Eason in 1 week of practice being able to figure it out. No matter what you want to say about the Tennessee defense, and then the Miami defense, I still think is good. And the Baltimore defense, same thing. They're in a load of trouble here.
All right, so I must have misspoke. I said trajectory. I meant trajectory for the Indianapolis Colts the rest of the way. Because 0-2, whether it be 0-2, 0-3, 2-6, this team is not winning with Carson Wentz at the helm. He was a loser at the end of his career in Philadelphia. He's a loser now. We have to call it what it is in terms of his success on the field. Forget about the intangibles. Forget about what he possesses in terms of arm strength, and he has the potential to be an elite quarterback. He hasn't done it up until this point in his career, especially at the end. He did it in the beginning with a good team around him, and now he's regressing in terms of his play on the field. So in terms of this team moving forward, I think that you go with Jacob Eason, because if you go with Eason now, you get the growing pains out of the way. He's going to make mistakes, but at least maybe you have the opportunity to push the ball down the field with a vertical passing game. I mean, at the end of the day, don't you want to utilize your playmakers? He did utilize Pittman early on, but then in the fourth quarter went away from him. I mean, in order to take this team to the next level, if T.Y. Hilton does come back and he's 100%, where do you go from an offensive perspective? I mean, is this more of a dual threat? They want to ground and pound and work off a play action with Jonathan Taylor? Or do you say, you know what, we'll abandon the run game because we can't run it consistently, and we'll just put five wide and put the football into our quarterback's hands? What is the offensive philosophy to get back into this thing for Frank Reich and the offensive staff?
I think they need balance. I just think they need balance. They can't go five. They don't have the kind of offense to go five wide. Right, you don't have a dynamic tight end. You don't have a dynamic wide receiver. Yeah, there's no Devontae Adams on this team, DeAndre Hopkins, or anyone like that. They have some decent receivers, but that's not really what they can be. Plus, I don't think Carson Wentz can hold up to that, to throw the ball 40, 50 times a game. With that offensive line, they need to be able to run the ball, and run the ball consistently, and run the ball, put themselves in second and six, second and five, in those kinds of situations. And I think they have to touch the ball 20, 22 times a game. The ball.
22?
Should be better than as well here. So I don't think they're playing to their strengths right now. I think they're playing to what they want their strength to be, but that's not what it is. Carson Wentz is not that guy. I don't think losing T.Y. Hilton is the full reason for this, but maybe losing that deep threat is hurting them a little bit as well. Maybe Hilton's a better, you know, a better reputation guy right now than he actually is on the field with that reputation.
Well, he's on the downside of his career. He's on the
But maybe the reputation
of
is of who he is, though. I don't think he'll do that much anymore either. But the reputation might still force defenses to pay attention to him, to play that safety over the top and get guys out of the box. Because I think right now teams are doing exactly what I would expect them to do. We're taking away Taylor and forcing Carson Wentz to be, because we don't think he can.
Well, let me ask you this about Tennessee, right? Tennessee stuck to the running game when they needed it the most. They were on the road yesterday. They continued to feed Derrick Henry because that is their MO, right? As he goes, so does Ryan Tannehill in the offense. Vrabel know that if they become one-dimensional and teams take away the running game, that they aren't as explosive as they are with balance, right? Look at what Arizona did last week. They took away the run game with Derrick Henry and forced the game in terms of on Tannehill's shoulders, right? Does Frank Reich say, okay, if we are 0-3, we're still going to try and run the football effectively with the physicality of the offensive line? Or at some point, do you start to panic and say, you know what, maybe we're not the same offense that we were with Phillip Rivers under center last year?
He probably has to. I mean, coaches have to make adjustments themselves, right, when they see what kind of team they have. And you hope he makes those adjustments, or you hope he's not stubborn and going to keep trying to get that round, that round peg into a square hole. Neither one would surprise me, by the way. We don't know what it is. I think you said something very key earlier when you said, Reich sort of bet on Wentz, right? He's banking on Wentz.
He lobbied for him, basically, and said, I could get the most out of him.
So if it's not working, guess who else is embarrassed? Reich, because he's wrong. And sometimes coaches have a tough time admitting that. They're going to keep banging with Wentz, assuming he's healthy, to prove they're right, even if it's not working here. Yeah, I don't think they have their future quarterback, you want to call it franchise quarterback, on the roster right now. I think after this season, they can't find it now, but after this season, they're going to have to go through free agency, trade, draft, whatever it might be, and no, they're not getting Deshaun Watson. No chance that Jacksonville trades him inside the division there. But I don't think their future quarterback is on the roster.
Well, I'll say this about their Week 3 matchup with Tennessee. Shocking line, 4.5 right now for Tennessee, -114 on FanDuel. If you want to take a shot on the Colts, I mean, -106. Didn't they walk into Nashville last year and walk out with a Thursday night victory? I understand that was with Rivers at the helm, but they traditionally play Tennessee fairly tough, even on the road. And to catch less than 5 points, that's a fishy line to me, especially the way they played against L.A. In the first half. I mean, inconsistent offense. You don't know the identity of this team. You have a team in Tennessee that's coming off a mile-high win off of a top-ranked Seattle team, and they're only laying 4.5 points at home. Isn't that a little bit of a shocker to you in terms of how the books established this Week 3 line?
You're right that Indianapolis generally has had their way over Tennessee, right? It's been a problem for Tennessee. It's early. I'm probably not going to touch this game because of that. I do enjoy some history there when it's over and over and over again that one team just has it on the other. But I have no faith right now. But if you are going to bet it and you want to take Tennessee's part, you better take it now, because if Wentz is out, that spread goes higher. Now it's -6. You know, so that's one thing. If you're going to take it, I would take it now and bank that Wentz isn't going to play or severely hobbled here. I think I have a funny feeling Wentz is going to play in this game, just not be worth anything. He's going to be hobbled, not be able to move, but he's going to try and tough it out, at least start the game. We'll go from there. That's what I expect to happen here. But I don't think Wentz is going to be all that good on Sunday, even against let's face it, the secondary of Tennessee that leaves a lot to be desired there, to put it nicely. And Tannehill's looked terrible so far. He doesn't look good. They won that game because of Derrick Henry yesterday with Seattle. Wanted nothing to do with them at the end. And Dan, I mean, they won it anyway, but they should have gone for that 2-point conversion and just let Henry run it right at them.
Might be an under. 15.5, -110 either way. If you got to feel that Wentz does play and he's not 100%, maybe early on you take a shot at the under and figure the running game for both teams will be in effect. I know last game in Nashville was a higher scoring affair, but with the quarterback situation in doubt, maybe you lean to the under in terms of 50.5 in that matchup. Let's talk about Kansas City quickly. I did not like the way their defense looked. We'll catch it on the back end, George, but I think this team is in trouble. I think this team is in trouble not only for a potential Super Bowl berth, but to win the AFC West. So when we come back, we'll talk KC Chiefs and Baltimore Ravens, Joe Lisi and George Kurtz, right here on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
What a game last night in Baltimore. The Chiefs had an 11-point lead early in the fourth quarter, but Lamar Jackson and the crew rally, force some turnovers on Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, and all of a sudden, both teams are 1-1, and what a game by Lamar Jackson, right? And John Harbaugh, credit that staff. He asked Lamar Jackson straight up when they had the lead. They get up 36-35. They have a 4th-and-1 with about a minute 12 remaining. He turns to his quarterback. He goes, "Hey, Lamar, do you want to go for it?" Lamar says, "Yeah, give me the rock, coach." 4th-and-1, they convert. Game, set, match. Baltimore is a 3.5-point underdog, wins the ball game outright. I mean, they were as big as a 7.5-point underdog in game. I mean, that was a gutty effort. I was more impressed, I'll tell you this, with the defensive adjustments that John Harbaugh and the Baltimore Ravens did more than the offense, because we know that they can pound the rock. We know that Lamar Jackson is one of the most lethal quarterbacks if you give him space. He showcased that last night, but that defense to force those two critical turnovers really will put their offense in a position to win it.
Well, a couple of things here. I loved Harbaugh going for it. All right, that throwed some stones, right? Because I wish more coaches would do it. You can't give the ball back to Mahomes. All right, you know what's going to happen. There was over a minute left. He was going to drive down for the game-winning field goal. I'll give him for being extremely smart and about asking Lamar Jackson, "Do you want to go for it?" All right, Harbaugh was going for it. It didn't matter. No player's going to go, "Oh, you know, coach, I don't feel really good. I think we should punt the ball, coach."
Well, let me ask you this, okay? If he didn't have Lamar Jackson and he had Aaron Rodgers and he had Tom Brady, if he had Sam Darnold, is he going for it in that type of situation? Or was it only because he had Lamar Jackson that he was willing to roll the dice at that point?
Well, he's not going for it with Sam Darnold. He almost certainly isn't Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers can run. Tom Brady, depends if he wanted a running quarterback. Tom Brady, you'd probably go for it as well. It's Tom freaking Brady here. But once again, my point was, you see sometimes coaches or general managers screw this up when they have the old team meeting. In baseball, this happens a lot. You have the old team meeting. Well, the only time you should have a team meeting is when you're facing a terrible team and you have your ace on the mound the next day. Yeah, that's what Harbaugh did here. He knew damn well he was going for this. It didn't matter what Lamar Jackson said or didn't say. He was going for it. He knew Lamar wasn't going to say, "No, coach, we should punt. You know, put the defense on the field, coach. They've been playing so well tonight." That was never going to happen. He just put his made Lamar field invested. "Whoa, coach, yeah, he wants my opinion." Yeah. It's great. It's a great coaching ploy. Fantastic coaching ploy. But he was always going for that. So I just thought it was great. More great the fact that he did go for it. Because, like I said, I think in this day and age, more teams are going to have to do this. That includes going for the two-point conversion. That's why I thought Tennessee should have gone for the two-point conversion. To go for the win right there. Why give a chance of giving the ball back
if they won
the coin toss in overtime? That sort of thing.
Did you see the extra point in terms of the Seattle game? He barely knuckled that in inside the goalpost there. They almost lost the game because of
that. Seattle missed the extra point. That's why they lost. Remember, Seattle missed the extra point. They have a touchdown.
No, I know, but I'm saying when Tennessee basically tied it up in regulation, he had the opportunity.
Missed the field goal he should have hit.
Right.
In a Tennessee game, for me, it's even beyond the kicking problems, is that Henry was wearing them down so much. I'm giving it to Henry. If he can't get 2 yards, I'm probably spreading it out. So I'm not going to do goal line offense where you have 11 guys right there. Spread them out. And if Henry can't get the 2 yards, fine. I lost with my best guy. But my theory is I just did not. Same thing here. I am not giving the ball back to the god player on the other team. Not giving it back to Russell Wilson. I'm not giving it back to Patrick Mahomes. So good for Harbaugh. And I guess I'm glad it worked out for him and didn't hurt me in any way. So, it was a great game. This is, once again, Joe, four straight standalone games that have been fantastic. All come down to the wire here, but I think that ends tonight.
And NFL is getting great ratings in terms of the primetime matchups. Two back-to-back Thursday night classics. I mean, Monday night was fantastic, and last night was fantastic. So we'll see what transpires in terms of tonight's game. But a couple of factors about the Kansas City team as a whole. Things I didn't like, things I liked. I mean, you look at the rushing attack, 61 yards. I mean, this is the same Achilles heel that in terms of the weakness of the offense, right? In the playoffs, they failed to run the football consistently, in the Super Bowl against a solid front seven in Tampa Bay. Third down conversions, 1 of 6. Did we get a Tyreek Hill sighting last night? I mean, Kelce stepped up with a marquee touchdown catch. I mean, that was unbelievable in terms of the catch and run. Had 7 receptions for 109 yards. But is this a deeper problem in terms of Kansas City, where they're becoming now a solely one-dimensional offense? As Patrick Mahomes goes, so does the wins and losses here.
Well, isn't that how it's going to go?
Yeah, but I feel like yes and no, because I feel like when they were a dominant team and they did have the Super Bowl run and they defeated San Francisco, the running game was a big part of that. Damian Williams, and then look at the first part of last year with the addition of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, when they reeled off like 10 wins in a row in the first half of the season prior to his injury, they were running the football for at least 100 yards per game. Now we've seen over the last 4 or 5 games now, dating back to the playoffs, where they can't run the football consistently, and it was the offensive line. They solidified that in the offseason, but now they still can't run the football. In back-to-back games, they're not running the football effectively, and they're not putting Patrick Mahomes into manageable third downs. He has to improvise on almost every third down attempt.
Yeah, I think what we saw yesterday was I think Baltimore made a conscious effort to try and take Hill out of the game. They didn't want to die by the quick strike. You know, and then for a while they had Kelce on the wraps too. And then you mentioned that touchdown by Kelce was, wow, one of the best I've seen. That was just fantastic. And it worked, sort of, right? But bottom line is they still scored 35 points. I understand one was on the return, so it's really 28. So they did a decent job there. I do wonder this. Because you're right, the running game should be much better because no one's playing the running game. No defense is worried about Hilaire, right? Every defense is worried about the pass game. And for the run game still not to do much damage is concerning, certainly concerning there. So that is a problem. You're right, they fixed the offensive line, but maybe these guys are just better pass blockers than they are run blockers. Maybe Clyde Edwards-Helaire, this is probably what I kind of believe more, just not the answer. I mean, they took him in the first round. Hey, not everybody works out. And I'm starting to think he's just not the answer. You know, we'll see. You know, it's only game 2. Long season left here. Maybe things work out here. Right. But I am starting to think that he's not going to be the answer to their run game woes. He'll be an average running back at best. It's all going to be on Mahomes' hands anyway here. But they should have won that game last night. That interception by Mahomes was terrible. Come on. And he said,
well, he's lived and died by that over the course of his career, right?
Where well, not quite that. That was
well,
silly.
That was...
that was horrendous. And the Edwards-Helaire fumble, that can't happen either. I mean, that's just silly. That's why they lost the game, because of those two turnovers. Mahomes sort of changed the momentum, right? That game, I thought the game was over right then. They were driving again, then he does that. Oh, God. And they score on that, then they score again. And the Edwards-Helaire thing that I know you and I talked during the break... he wasn't even hit hard. The guy barely put a finger on it. The ball's on the ground. That can't happen.
He just hit the ball, basically. That's all that he really did.
He hit the right spot. But that's one of those things where you snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah, but how does that affect Helaire moving forward, obviously, right? With touches, do they go back to the veteran Darrell Williams? That's going to be a concern. They're laying 7 points to L.A. Sunday afternoon. I mean, minus 104, they're 0-2 against the number so far. You know, they didn't cover the opening line of 6, 6.5 against the Browns. Didn't cover the closing line of 4.5. Didn't close 3, 3.5 yesterday. Now you're going to lay a full touchdown to Justin Herbert and the crew coming off a home loss to the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, that's no walk in the park either. That's a solid front seven. And this is a team at the end of the year. Granted, it was without a lot of the starters that beat you by 17 points in 2020. So, I mean, early look here, I'd be inclined to take the 7 points with Justin Herbert in this matchup.
What's the over? That's the first thing I'm thinking. It's going to be
take a guess. It's 54 and a half.
54. Wow. I was going to say about 51 and a half, 52. I wasn't thinking 54. That's high. Now, one thing we saw yesterday in the if you think about the over in this game, the Chargers were playing to keep the ball away. And I think they'll do the same thing. Let's keep the ball away from Dak in the offense. A lot of bend but don't break on defense. Both teams are playing the same way. Bend but don't break on defense. I expect almost the same game plan for Sunday against Kansas City. Another dynamic offense here. So I think I'd probably lean more towards the under here because the Chargers defense is better than we give it credit for. They played pretty well yesterday after getting out the first two quick touchdowns to Dallas. Other than that, the Chargers defense is good. They got some pass pressure there. Bosa was kept in check for the most part, but interesting game. It's in Kansas City, so you know, one of the toughest places to play in the NFL here. I'm not betting. I can't bet the Chargers because they charged it yesterday. Chargers should have won that game yesterday. I know the refs had some issues really for both teams. They had some weird calls in this game, took away two touchdowns from the Chargers, but they also gave the Chargers a personal foul on a punt, another possession, an interception. I thought there were a lot of ticky-tack fouls in the game both ways there. I like the Chargers. I think they're a better team than what we saw yesterday. They should have won the game here. I don't think they'll beat Kansas City in Kansas City. That's the question. So I'm banking they can lose but still cover. I don't think I'm going to put money on that, no. Angry teams coming in.
I was impressed with the Cowboys in that victory. I know you're a Cowboy fan. You can't talk without a little bit of bias in terms of your statements. But, you know, that defense, sure, as decimated as they were, I was impressed with Micah Parsons off the edge. I was impressed with Diggs. I was impressed with the bend but don't break type of ability of that defense to force Herbert to be patient. I mean, they had a very good defensive game plan. And when you pound the rock for over 150 yards on the ground, that offensive line is starting to come to form. Dak Prescott solely doesn't have to do it with his arm. If the running game is there, they're going to be there in terms of a contender, not just for the division title. They're going to be there for a potential sleeper for the NFC Championship. I'll say it right now. I mean, if this defense can continue to develop for Dallas, this is back-to-back games now where they made and forced turnovers against two of the top quarterbacks in the NFC. Well, AFC for the Chargers, but forced it against Brady in week one. I mean, this is back-to-back solid efforts now.
Well, the defense is doing, you said, they're playing bend but don't break, and they're committing to, they're getting turnovers. Not committing turnovers, they're getting turnovers. That's what they're doing, and that's what they have
they're
to do.
They're forcing them.
They don't have the playmakers to really do much else here. The problem is yesterday, the Cowboy offense only had three possessions in the second half. Because the offense still goes on a lot, the opposing offense goes on a lot of long drives, and they're not getting the ball here because you can move the ball against the Cowboys, but the Chargers couldn't plug it in yesterday. They couldn't put it in the end zone, so that's got to change a little bit. Micah Parsons, how can you not be extremely impressed by this young man?
Unbelievable.
Think about it. He's a linebacker. Yes, right. He's told one game into the NFL, hey Micah, we need you to play defensive end on Sunday. When was the last time that happened? All right, he only played 39 snaps. And
but
he was good.
Tell you,
he was good. He was getting pressure back there.
Hasn't he changed the whole mindset of this defense? I mean, we always say, oh, what could one player do? Well, one player that believes that, you know, they are a legitimate playmaker, he has this defense believing, doesn't he, George?
Absolutely. I mean, he was great. Dallas and their fans were probably all upset when they couldn't get Surtain because they were sniped by Denver. Might have worked out for the best.
I tell you, Micah Parsons playing like Rookie Player of the Year. When we come back, we'll wrap it up. Keep it where it is.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
wrapping up today's show, talking about the recaps of week number two. Going to turn our attention to a week one line. Let's talk about the Atlanta Falcons. Got blown out yesterday as a 13.5 point underdog to Tampa Bay and Tom Brady. I mean, Brady with five touchdown passes. That game was actually 28-25 in the third quarter, and then Tampa Bay just pulled away in the fourth quarter, dominated that matchup. Now the Falcons go on the road. They're a three-point dog to the Giants, coming off a disappointing Thursday night loss to the Washington football team. Giants set as a three-point favorite on FanDuel, minus 114. Do you have any confidence in back-to-back road games for the Falcons here? I was impressed that the offense did get into gear in the second half, but, I mean, catching three on the road, could they strike the upset and Daniel Jones and the Giants fall to 0-3?
Giants get a couple of extra days rest here, playing on a Thursday. No, I'm going to be with the Giants here. Falcons, I know they did play a better game than we thought. I also thought Tampa was just toying with them.
You think so?
It just seemed like that to me. So I'll probably be on the Giants here. Nothing big. I don't trust them either. I don't know if I can trust Daniel Jones to play two good games in a row, right? But then that team made a lot of mistakes as well. They lost the game, but I think one of the teams going to get a win here. I'll say it's the Giants. I don't feel great about it, but give me the Giants. I got a crazy stat for you, or just a funny little thing for Brady. Sunday will be the first time he's ever played a game in Los Angeles. There you go.
Really? That's interesting. Wow. In a 20-plus career, 20 years, he's never played on the West Coast in California? Never played in with
I said Los Angeles,
Patriots?
Not California.
Los Angeles. All right, so Los Angeles. All right, okay. All right, so we'll see how that game plays out. We'll talk about that tomorrow. I will say this about the Giant line. This is the highest total for the Giants. It has to be about 10 games, 12 games now, 48.5. I lean to the over early on in that matchup in East Rutherford.
Lots of points.
Yeah. We'll talk about this game tomorrow. We'll also talk about the rest of the Week 3 matchups for George Kurtz, our producer Christian. I'm Joe Lisi. Have a great day, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.